So the other thing I want to ask you about in terms of CDK inhibitors is selection of CDK. And again, Matt makes his point in his summary slide that the differences in toxicity profiles might be considered in selection, that it's difficult to compare efficacy head to head, but he notes the question of specific CDKs in poor prognosis patients, abema, for example, liver mets, or primary endocrine resistance, FGFR, EGFR, et cetera, abema and ribo in improved survival in difficult to treat situations, ribo, premenopausal abema, second line. So with all that sort of whizzing around a little bit, can you talk a little bit about some of the issues I think that are out there in terms of selection of CDK?
So there are three commercially available products, as you know, and the first sort of big analysis point is that I think these drugs are interchangeable. I think the effects are all very similar. As I mentioned earlier, the hazard ratios are almost all identical. They do differ a little bit in side effect profile. So palbociclib and ribociclib are really, really similar products. 3 weeks on, 1 week off. Neutropenia is the dominant laboratory side effect, though it's very rare to see febrile neutropenia. Abemaciclib has slightly less neutropenia, but slightly more in the way of diarrhea. My own personal experience has been that the palbociclib is the most easy drug for patients to tolerate. The laboratory artifacts of the neutropenia are managed either with follow-up or with dose reduction. And actually, parenthetically, there's a very nice study the Canadians ran where they compared 125 versus 100 of palbociclib. There's no difference in outcome, so there's no worry about dose reduction. And not having diarrhea is an appealing profile for many patients. So mostly when I talk to community docs or others, I say, talk to your team, talk to your patients, figure out which product you think is most effective and tolerable for your patients, and then just use it in everybody so that you have educational materials and familiarity and consistency across your practice. And I think that's the smart way to do it. Now, at San Antonio, there's a very interesting abstract, a small study from Moffitt Cancer Center, where they looked at the use of abemaciclib after treatment previously with palbociclib based on pharmacy records. And this raises a really interesting question as to whether ongoing CDK4/6 inhibition beyond progression is helpful. And as you know, palbociclib is indicated in combination with endocrine therapy, as is abema, but abema has a secondary label for single agent therapy. So in the real world, it often happens that patients will get one CDK4/6 inhibitor and progress and then might be offered a different CDK4/6 inhibitor in the future. So they did a chart review on about 20 patients, and they found that if you'd previously had palbociclib and then progressed, and then about 20 patients were offered abemaciclib down the road, they found that abemaciclib worked for about 3 months and that about 20% of patients had some kind of clinical response, not an official response, but just a clinical benefit. So I think there are some nuggets of data that that's not a crazy thing to do. We all do it on occasion, and I've had a few patients, you know, who clearly seem to do well with that second go around.
That's really, actually, that was what I wrote down as the next thing I was going to ask you about was abema monotherapy, but that's really interesting. What about this other thing that Matt notes about abema in poor risk, liver mets, et cetera?
Yeah, so, I mean, they really haven't been head-to-head comparisons, and I'm not sure I would put too much stock in some of these subset ideas. One of the interesting things about abemaciclib is it does seem to have CNS penetration, and there has been discussion as to whether that might make it preferable. The reality is that for most women with ER-positive breast cancers, you don't see brain metastases or CNS metastases during the course of their endocrine therapy. It's very rare to see that. So whether that provides a clinically compelling distinction is not so clear in my mind.
You know, it's funny when you're talking about the fact that you can superimpose the data. I was flashing on that slide that you show where you go, I know I'm not supposed to show this, but then you compare the three. So I always cite that slide because this happens all the time in other CME areas. We had a small cell lung cancer thing recently where durvalumab and atezo was exactly somebody put it on the same slide. I said, well, that's the Halberstein effect.
Well, if you get bored on a Saturday afternoon, you can take the PowerPoints of the Kaplan-Meier curves from the various publications and you sort of have to play with them to rescale them. But then if you print them out, cut them out and hold them up to the light, they are superimposable. It's a good exercise for fellows on a quiet day.